There's a big question we're asking this hour. What is nature writing? Laura Tsavoy has some strong opinions on the question. She's a professor of environmental studies and geology at Mount Holyoke College and co-editor of the book The Colors of Nature. Tsavoy says too often nature writers focus on pristine wilderness and neglect the gritty reality of the places where people actually live. In cities, for instance, maybe even near toxic waste sites. And writing about these places means grappling with difficult questions about race and poverty. This is a personal matter for Tsavoy. As an African-American, she's often asked, why is there so little nature writing by people of color?
I say, of course there is. There's a lot. I'm often asked the twin question, why don't African-Americans care about the environment? And my answers to both questions are, well, one, yes, we do, and there's a lot of writing. Part of the problem, I think, is the frame within which nature and environmental writing is published. The frame is limited to the extent that it excludes culturally and ethnically rich and diverse voices.
So really what we need to do, you're saying, is redefine what is nature writing, not who's writing it.
Exactly. Redefine nature writing, beginning by redefining or rethinking what environment is and what nature is. I imagine environment very broadly, not just as air or land or water that we depend on or that we pollute, but as the circumstances, conditions, and contexts in which we all live our lives. So that definition falls short if you don't include the experiences of places that are exiled or degraded, migrant or urban, toxic or dispossessed.
I understand what you're saying, but I think we have to start by recognizing what I suspect both of us know is generally referred to as nature writing. It's somebody out writing about the glory of wildflowers in the Rocky Mountains. It is writing about going for a stroll through the stony New England countryside.
Right.
And that is nature writing.
That is nature writing. And there's more. That type of nature writing, or that nature writing that most people associate with the genre, is really a writing of privilege, a writing of opportunity and choice. And there is so much writing about our place in the world or an individual's place in the world that's based on the lack of choice or based on poverty. And those stories are as important as moving into the wilderness, as exploring the natural world. But there are also elements of reclaiming one's heritage, of finding home or recognizing that home can be an urban garden that's carved out of a brownfield, but it is a place that you can claim.
So writing about that urban garden is just as much nature writing as writing about alpine fields.
I think so. Because where do we live primarily? Are we living in the alpine fields, or are we living more in urban communities? And when I say we, I'm thinking of a larger population within the United States. But we don't need to go elsewhere to find nature. We can find it right here under our feet.
That, of course, is true for everybody. For
yes.
Specifically the subject at hand, writers of color writing about nature, there are other issues. The one that you start with is New Orleans. New Orleans, especially post-Katrina, but you can't talk about New Orleans post-Katrina without talking about New Orleans as a whole, can you?
No, you can't. And I think you can understand the true impact of the breaching of the levees following the hurricane if you understand the historical context. After the Civil War, African Americans who had been enslaved and then were trying to gain access to find a home, they were only able to get the lowest line, least desirable places there, the areas that were flood prone, that were mosquito bound. And that segregation continued all the way through the 20th century. So if you look at the neighborhoods in New Orleans today, a geography of segregation still applies based on a geography of segregation that's more than 100 years old. And if you think about poverty and the ability to leave, to evacuate, so few people of color who were below the poverty line had cars, and mass transportation failed them. And so they were truly burdened by the historical legacy of racism, and on top of that, the disaster of the levees breaching.
Isn't the writing about this issue political writing, sociological writing? Although I'm beginning to see that any writing about place is what you're saying is nature writing.
Any writing about place and one's relationship to place is a form of nature writing. The case in point of writing about wilderness areas as if wilderness areas are completely pristine or untouched really is largely an illusion. Because at the time that the national parks were first established at the end of the 19th century, and at the time that the idea of wilderness with John Muir, Gifford Pinchot, the first great battle for wilderness with Hetch Hetchy, at that time, land was being set aside as pristine at the same time that Native peoples were being removed from that very land and set aside in reservations. And I very much think that wilderness areas need to be saved, but we also need to recognize their origin and that they were not completely unpeopled or unpopulated land.
Of course, many people will be familiar with the names of John Muir and Gifford Pinchot. Are there other names that we should know, people who write about those issues?
Well, let's turn our eyes back, if we can, to prior to the Civil War. African-American abolitionists were fighting against slavery, and at the same time, many of them were fighting and writing against the use of arsenic in tobacco fields. Over a century ago, two wonderful writers, Sarah Winnemucca, who is of Paiute heritage, and Zitkala Saw, a Lakota Dakota woman, both wonderful authors, noted the parallels between the racism that their people were experiencing at the hand of European or Euro-American settlers and the degradation of the land due to the environmental attitudes of those same settlers. The close parallel, the degradation of a people and the degradation of a land.
We have talked a little bit about the problem that Katrina caused in New Orleans. It's by no means alone.
Right.
We have people living in areas near hazardous waste because they couldn't afford to live further away from it.
And because the people who did live farther away from it and had the money and power to keep the waste sites or cement plants or you can name quite a few different polluting industries who had the power to put them elsewhere. You can think of Camden, New Jersey as a case in point. There's a neighborhood in Camden, New Jersey that does have a cement plant on one side of a playground and a waste disposal, well, an incinerator on the other side. And the asthma rates of the children who live in that neighborhood have skyrocketed, as has the incidence of cancer.
So, again, what you're really saying is that you can't even really think about nature without thinking about the politics and the sociology of it, but the cultural divide. When did this notion begin to change for you?
My work really has always been at the edges or the boundaries. In my education, from art to science, and then as a woman who is African-American, but also within African-American, also Native American, Euro-American, but not having access to those others because I'm labeled in one box. Check, she's black. When I was a little girl, I would say 4 or 5 years old, I had the self theory. We lived in California at that time, which is where I was born. And that is that sky flows in my veins and that sun colored my skin because I looked like sun in afternoon light, just like the California land. And that's what I believed colored meant. But then we moved to Washington, D.C., around the time of the 1968 riots. And I'm 7, turning 8, and I learned that colored has another meaning. And I learned when someone spat on me, tore my dress, pushed me into the mud, and called me nigger. And I realized that race almost trumped what I thought I was. I thought I was born within Earth. And I think growing up and coming to where I am now, it's been an attempt to acknowledge how these two fragments, and they became fragments in 1968, actually belong together.
Laura Savoy teaches environmental studies and geology at Mount Holyoke College, and she's the co-editor of the book The Colors of Nature. You will find links to several essays in the book on our website at ttbook.org.